Hello and welcome to today's episode of Social Media Moneymakers, part of the Stan family of podcasts. I'm your host, Brock Johnson, and in today's episode, we're going to be talking about how to travel to Japan for free. I'm kidding, that's not exactly what we're going to be talking about today, but nonetheless, I am interviewing an expert at getting paid to travel who really has an expertise in a lot more than just that. She really is going to help us figure out how you can get paid for posting on social media, even if you only have around 1,000 followers, and we're even going to talk about how you can get paid if you have less than 1,000 followers. We begin today's conversation by talking about content and the common pitfalls and mistakes that people make that are keeping your views very low, because I recently pulled a lot of you on my Instagram stories, and I heard that one of the biggest pain points that you're struggling with is that your reels aren't getting the amount of views that you feel they deserve. So we're going to talk about what do you do if that's the case? How do you bring them back? How do you boost your views on Instagram or really on whatever platform you focus on? After that, we're going to talk about one of the most dreaded terms in all of social media, which is niche. And then because this is Social Media Money Makers, we're going to talk about making money. And I think it's important to say that I really appreciate and I agree with the stance that today's guest takes on making money on social media, where a lot of people might preach or teach jumping directly from growing a following to getting brand deals and sponsorships. She actually teaches a really helpful stepping stone in that path that allows you to bridge the gap between growing a following and monetizing that following, which is affiliate marketing. I don't want to spoil too much of what we cover in the interview, but what I do want to tell you is that regardless of what industry or niche you are in, today's episode is going to help you monetize your following and figure out how you can start getting paid for the things you're posting. My guest today is Emily Cooper of @EmilyEatsAndExplores on Instagram. She's got over 100,000 followers and she is an expert, like I said earlier, in getting paid to travel, in solo travel, in remote work, and helping you get brand deals so that you can either get gifted travel, completely sponsored travel, or even get paid to travel. But again, like I said, we're not just focusing on travel content creators today. We're really broadening the scope and picking out the different elements of her expertise that can truly be applied to any content creator or entrepreneur who's looking to monetize their business on social media. Also, I want to encourage you to stick around until the very end because Emily shares a free guide that's going to be very, very helpful for you. And it's an awesome resource, especially considering the fact that it's free. So without further ado, here's the interview. Hello, Emily. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Thank you so, so much for having me. I'm super excited.
Yeah, I'm super excited to have you here. My first question, because I was watching your Instagram stories last night, and you were talking about watching Love is Blind. And so my first question is the ultimate hack to becoming an influencer in 2024 to just go on Love is Blind?
Oh my God, you absolutely should. No, just kidding. That show is drama, drama, drama. I feel like it used to be so good. I don't know what happened to it. I'm like, what is going on now? Like, I was like feeling these couples and now I'm like, what is happening?
I know. I've like watched every season with my wife and it used to be like, I love the show. It was like so authentic and you could feel, yes. It felt like the vast majority of people were there for the right reason. And there was like maybe one random person who just wanted to be on TV. But now, and I don't know if you've seen all the drama and the tea that's being spilt on TikTok, but it seems like every single couple and like basically every single person on the show is on the show because they want to become an influencer. But anyways, I digress. I know that's not why we're here. I just thought we'd start with something funny and light. Why we are here is talking about your expertise, which I love how niched down and specific you are. Not just how to make money as a content creator, how to get brand deals, but specifically getting paid to be a travel content creator. That's your focus. But of course, I know you have so much expertise that can really help anyone listening who wants to get paid for their content. So I want to encourage, I know I said this in the intro, but I want to encourage anyone who is listening today to take notes and not to, you know, turn away because you're like, oh, they're just going to talk about getting paid to go to Greece. We might talk about that, but we're going to really talk about the foundational principles of good content and getting paid for posting, getting free stuff for posting, which I don't care who you are. That's something that pretty much every person who is creating content on social media would love to do. So with all that being said, I would love to start by going through something you posted about a month ago, which is the four steps to becoming a paid travel creator. And you said those four steps are step one, your content, making good content. Step two, your niche. Step three, starting with affiliate income. And then step four, moving on to brand deals and UGC. So let's start with step one, content. something that I've heard from a lot of my audience members is that they're really struggling with low views. And their content just isn't getting the reach they feel like it deserves. So my first question is, what are some things that the average person should avoid doing, or these kind of these common mistakes that they might be making that you feel like are hurting their views or are hurting their reach?
I feel like when I first started on Instagram, it's completely different than it was now. So I feel like you always have to be evolving your content in order to stay up to date on what is actually working on the platform. But I feel right now you really have to stand out because there is such a sea of creators. So I think when everybody is looking, when you are putting your focus into looking what everybody else is doing, we call that inspiration, right? We want to find inspiration. We want to see what everyone else is doing and how they're creating this content. It really gets you stuck in this web. And I think it's okay when you're first starting out, right? It's good to see, you know, what people are doing, what is actually working. But I think you need to sit down, put, you know, block everything out and figure out what do you want to talk about? What kind of audience do you want to talk to? Who do you actually want to help? And really get creative in your content and make sure that it's really coming from a place of authenticity and bringing your personality into it. So that it really stands out in the sea of people scrolling. You really want to stop the scroll, right? Like that's what the goal is, to get people to stop the scroll, look at your video, and then hopefully go to your page and follow you and become a part of your amazing community. So I think first, when you're looking at what ton of creators are doing and how they're creating content, sometimes it puts you into this spiral. So blocking that out, focusing on how you can be creative, the ideas that you have, because you are a creative person, you want to be a content creator, there's a lot of value that you can add. So I would say that's definitely a big thing that people have to get over, especially in the beginning.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And it's something you have to keep reminding yourself of. Even myself, personally, as you were saying that, it reminded me of a few months ago, I interviewed a few awesome creators and I was keeping track of everyone else's, you know, kind of growth in the industry. And there was a few people who stood out because they were crushing it and they were blowing up. And I was really enjoying their content and enjoying watching them blow up. But I was noticing that it was different from mine. And so long story short, I was like, let me try to like recreate some of their videos. Let me try to use some of their styles. And it kind of put me into this rut, this place where I was like, I wasn't feeling creative. I wasn't feeling like myself. My content wasn't performing that well. And that was even more frustrating, right? Because I'm like, it's working for them. Why is it not working for me? And the bottom line is kind of like you were just getting at, I'm not them. So it's not going to work for me. I had to, like you said, put the blinders back on and remind myself of who I am and what makes me unique to stand out. So let's dive into that a little bit more. What are some ways, do you have any tips that people can think about when they're trying to figure out like what differentiates them and what can allow them to be unique from everyone else posting?
I'm really big on putting your personality into your content. So I think there's a trend going on right now of like this whole faceless content and, you know, you're a shy person. Let's not show your face. Let's not show your personality. But for me, I'm very much like put your personality into the content. So if you are a funny person, create reels where there's some type of comedy in the reel. If you're more of like a moody aesthetic person, you can absolutely make that. But I definitely feel if you put your personality in your own spin on your content. So share if you went to a beautiful place and something went wrong, you know, share that kind of stuff, share the good and the bad, put your own personal spin and your story into it, because your story and your personality is what's going to set you apart from everyone else. So I would definitely say, you know, showing your face in your content is great, showing your voice, but putting your personality into your content in some way that's going to speak to you, because that's going to bring the right audience to your account.
Yeah, I love that. I'm sure that would feel a lot more authentic too, like really genuine. Now, do you have any like strategic tips, anything that's like tactical or practical? If you feel like your views are low and you want to boost them, is there anything, any like parts of the video, maybe if we're talking about reels specifically, that you should focus on or that you should like revisit or anything like that you can share with us?
I always think the first 3 seconds of your video is the most important part of their video. I feel like people say this all of the time, but it really is true. So I always like to have the hook. And I feel like when people talk about the hook, they always think of it in terms of words. But I always try to have 3 hooks in my reel. So the first hook is going to be the text on screen. So that's going to be your first hook. So maybe that's something like, did you know you could do this here? And then everybody's like, oh, what do you mean by that? Your third hook is going to be the video itself. So maybe you're doing something in the video where maybe you're moving the camera around and it's catching someone's eye. Maybe it's a really beautiful scenery where you're like, oh my gosh, where is this a gorgeous place? I always try to, sometimes I'll do the oh my God face or like, wow face. And that's something that's going to catch people's eye as well. And then my third hook is actually going to be the first line of the reel. So that's going to be the first line. It's the only line if people are scrolling on the Reels tab that people can see. So I try to also make that a hook. So you have 3 different hooks on your reel. So if people have, you know, they have that text on screen, they see the video and they see that first line, all of those you want to really draw people in. If you have a voiceover on the reel as well, that's going to be top notch. I did all 4 of those on one of my reels a few weeks ago, and it had like 4 million views on that one. Wow. Now, you don't have to do it every single time, but it can definitely help, especially if it's some type of unique thing that you're sharing, right? You always want to share something that's a little bit different from what everybody else is sharing. So I think those 4 things, if you can do all of them, that's great. But thinking about the hooks in the first 3 seconds of the video to really draw those people in and to stop the scroll.
Love that. That's awesome. If you include 4 hooks, you'll get 4 million views. That's my big takeaway.
Oh yeah.
But so in terms of hooks, do you think of the hook while you're creating the content? Do you come up with the hook and then film and edit and then like kind of everything's planned after that? Or is it like, hey, I made the rest of the video. I made second four through whenever it ends. And now I'm going to come up with like the hook that grabs them. When do you come up with that?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. I think for me, as being a travel content creator, I'm doing most of my filming in the moment and then seeing kind of all of the things that I have created. We do a lot of what is called B-roll. So B-roll content is basically content that you can use that you can continue to add to different reels. So it's not something that maybe you're talking about a specific thing or showing something very specific in the video. It could be maybe a video of you walking up a mountain or taking a cooking class or something like that. So having that B-roll content, that's a lot of the content that I have. So I'll see, you know, at the end of the day or at the end of a filming day, what I have filmed and what I can compile to create into a nice reel. And then I'll usually come up with the hooks later to see, you know, what actually works. Maybe I will, you know, put it over a trending audio, you know, an audio that is trending at the moment, and do it that way. But I don't think I ever usually think of the hook first and then film after that, but that could probably be a good way for you to do it as well.
Gotcha. Yeah. I'm sure there's, you know, different people who go about things differently. I'm the same way where I like to come up with like, what's the video going to be about? And then I'll worry about the hook later.
Yeah.
But let's talk about B-roll, because I think that's such a great topic and a great thing, whether you're a UGC creator or you're doing brand deals, or even if you're just literally anyone who's trying to grow on Instagram. There's a lot of people who have talked about this like B-roll content, mm-hmm. where it's just kind of like, you know, it feels very natural. It feels almost like you had a documentary crew following you around. It's not you holding the phone out selfie style and talking to the camera. But that's really challenging for a lot of people. Like, I feel like there's a lot of shyness or timidness around filming B-roll, especially in public. Mm-hmm. But I would imagine as a travel content creator, especially, you're doing a lot of B-roll filming in public. Like, you are setting up the tripod and you are filming yourself walking down the beach, 3 different takes. So question number one, how do you overcome that camera shyness, that fear? Is that something that you still deal with? Or is it like, hey, I've been doing this for a few years now, so I'm just kind of used to it?
I absolutely still deal with that. And sometimes if there's way too many people, then I'll just be like, okay, I'm just going to do, you know, 0.5 on my iPhone, flip it around and just film it that way. Because one, there's just too many people. It feels overwhelming and you're kind of like looking around at what's going on. But also you want to be safe with your iPhone too. So if there's a lot of people and it's sitting up on a tripod, you're like, ooh, I don't want that taken. So it's definitely something I still deal with. But at the end of the day, like, you're going to be so much happier that you got the shot and that you did it and then you went through it and you were just kind of like, I don't really care what's going on. Like, I'm here in this beautiful place in this moment and I want to film that. So I think setting it up is going to be the first thing, just getting yourself a good tripod, wiping off your lens, set your phone up, make sure it's on, you know, 4K and 60 FPF, like all of that good stuff. And make sure it's good to go. You can get a clicker or remote if you want to. So maybe you're taking photos as well. So you can get a remote on your tripod and let it just keep running. But I usually just set it on the video and then I'll just do a bunch of different things there that feel natural to me. Maybe I'll be working on my laptop. That's a big B-roll that I have. I'll be in like maybe a gorgeous balcony in a beautiful destination. And I'm working on my laptop showing that, you know, I'm a remote worker and I'm a travel content creator. Like you said, on a beach, just set it up, maybe, you know, have a video of you running towards it or you, you know, walking away from the camera, doing a bunch of different angles. But you really just have to have fun with it. I think people are thinking, they're like, oh my God, I want to get the perfect shot or I want to do this. Like, at the end of the day, you just have to have fun with it. You have to laugh at yourself. There's definitely going to be people being like, what is this? Or being like, oh, do you need me to like help you with that? And you're like, no, I'm good. I got this. I'm okay. So you just have to laugh at yourself with it and just know, like, if people are staring at you, they're probably one, like, just jealous that you are able to do that and have the confidence to do that. But they're also probably just really curious as to why you are doing that in the first place. So just put a good spin on it and it will help you feel a little bit less uncomfortable.
Yeah. I completely agree with you. And I'm glad that you kind of finished up there because I was planning on adding and saying exactly that is, you know, people are curious. That's probably why they're looking. And a lot of them are jealous that you have that confidence that you're able to do that. I know myself personally, like when I see someone in public, and I don't know if you feel the same way, Emily, or if like anyone listening feels the same way, but when I see someone in public filming themselves, I'm like, that's awesome. Like, I remember shortly after we moved into our house, I saw like my neighbors were filming like a TikTok dance in their backyard. And I wasn't judgmental. I wasn't like, oh my gosh, look at these guys. I was like, that's awesome. Like, I watched them practice it a few times. And then I think I did it myself like the next day because they inspired me. And I think that it kind of reminds me of, not to get like philosophical and deep on us here, but it reminds me of that quote about like the man in the arena. Right? Like the people in the crowd, they're not content creators. They're not business owners. They're not entrepreneurs. They don't get why you're filming B-roll on the beach. But the people whose opinion you should care about, who are doing what you do, who are in the arena with you, who are the fellow entrepreneurs and content creators and business owners, they get it. And they understand why you're doing what you're doing. And they probably even admire the fact that you're bold enough to do it in public, while most of us, even myself and yourself, who like we're professional content creators, we still feel that kind of anxiety around it. So I totally love everything you've said. I'd love to circle back. I know when we were talking about like creating content that gets better views and boosts your views, you talked a lot about differentiating yourself and bringing your personality into things and figuring out what sets you apart. And that reminds me of niche, which is something that everyone talks about, but also everyone has a different definition of. So let's start by asking, how do you, Emily, define the word niche?
So for me, I think that it is either a person that you are speaking to, a specific person that you are speaking to, or it's a problem that you are trying to solve. And I like thinking of that idea because I think people think of it still very generally right now. And I think if you have a very specific person in mind that you're trying to help, you know, who are they? What do they do? What are the kind of problems that they have? What kind of things do they maybe need from you? I think it's a lot easier for you to niche down and really find your person, because I think generally people think of niche would be like just travel as a niche or finance as a niche or like social media, you know? And I think those can definitely be niches, but I think when you're first starting out, if you can get even deeper into that to really find a solid and engaged community, then it's really just going to set you apart from the crowd.
Yeah. Do you have any tips for doing that, for actually like getting deeper? Because I agree wholeheartedly. The word travel, that's not a niche, that's an industry. The mm-hmm. social media is an industry, it's not a niche. So how do you like figure out the niche? How do you find the niche? How do you pick it?
So I like to think of, there's this chart that I like to use. So one is going to be your passions. So what are the things that you are passionate about? What are the kind of things that you actually genuinely enjoy talking about? If you're not sure, ask your friends and your family, like, what are the things that they ask you that they know that you really like to talk about, or the things that you're doing on your free time? And then you want to think about your skills. So what are you actually skilled at? So in the travel industry, maybe it's using points and miles to allow people to travel for free. You actually have a skill on that. It's something that you've been doing for a long time. And then profitability. If you are on social media to make money, it's always great to add that in there as well. I know not everybody is doing it. Some people are doing it as a creative outlet or as a little bit of a hobby right now. But in this age of social media, like, there's so many ways that you can make money. So why not? So adding profitability in there as well. So just thinking about your passions, your skills, the profitability of your potential niche, and then thinking about your story as well. So I am talking to people who want to become content creators, and I am able to talk about this because I was able to become a full-time content creator myself. So you really want to talk about the things that you are able to share, like, you're bringing your own story into it and sharing examples in your life, educating it, but also sharing examples of how you maybe got through a certain challenge. Or for an example, like when you are first pitching to a brand, bringing in how you first pitched to a brand and how it turned out. Maybe it turned out great, maybe it didn't. So you always want to make sure you're talking about something that you have done yourself or that you're really interested in and skilled in.
Gotcha. All right. I'm going to ask your advice now, and I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate. So
okay.
I think most people listening they're familiar that they can at least assume me, my niche, like Instagram growth. It's my background. It's my passion. It's all those things you just listed. Let's also throw in snowboarding. Snowboarding is something I'm passionate about. It's something I'm skilled at. It's something that I could figure out ways to profit off of. Maybe I'm going to become an instructor, or I'm going to sell like travel guides specifically relating to snowboarding. So my question for you is, and this is totally up to you what you would advise me here, do you think I should integrate that into my Instagram? So I'm both teaching people how to grow on Instagram and doing the snowboarding thing. Should I do a separate Instagram account? Should I pick one to focus on and leave the other one to just be like a passion of mine, but not necessarily a passion that I'm going to monetize with my Instagram following? What do you think? Because I know a lot of people, when they hear these conversations about niche, that's what pops into their head is like, but Emily, I also love this, and mm-hmm. I'm also good at this, and I also love ceramics. So how do I mix it all in? So what do you say to that person?
I would say I definitely would not talk about the two together, just because I think it would really confuse your audience. Maybe someone sees a viral reel of you snowboarding and they're like, oh, awesome, they gave really great advice, I'm going to go to their account. And then they see a ton of videos of you talking just about social media or growing on Instagram. And they're like, this is very confusing. Now I have no idea what this person does. And you don't have that know, like, and trust factor, which really comes with talking about one thing specifically. So if this was something that you did want to profit on, that you really enjoy, you could create a separate account with it if you do have the time and the energy to put in the work and the quality and quantity that you need to put in to grow these accounts into two accounts. You can absolutely do that. But for me, this is why I love having a niche that I talk about something specifically. I love reading and I love going to the gym, but I would not want to film myself reading and film myself going to the gym every single day. I wouldn't want to do that. I want those to be just for me and for myself. And same thing with my relationship. I want my relationship to be more personal. I don't really want to share that a lot online. So that's not going to be something that I'm going to want to talk about. And that allows me to really stay on track and grow my very specific audience without being like, oh my God, I could post about anything today. I could post about going to the gym. I could post about what I'm cooking about. I could post about this. And I think it's really overwhelming in that sense. So it has really helped me to be really specific so that I don't, one, have to make so many decisions on things. And then I can also have beautiful things in my life that I can keep just for me as well.
I love that. Amen to everything you just said. That's awesome advice. I think that's perfect. And that's completely how I feel too. Like, I've thought about snowboarding and my relationship and these other areas that I could monetize, but I'm like, why would I want to monetize something that I love so much? Like, I'm happy with what I can do, and I can separate this other area of my life into another area of my life. But speaking of things that are very overwhelming or can be confusing is affiliate marketing. And I feel like it's a term that a lot of people, they think it has something to do with like master reseller rights, or they think it's something new, or they think it's something that's like not really trustworthy. But I'm a big fan of affiliate marketing, and I love that you made it third on your list and you actually put it before brand deals and UGC, because that was my journey. When I first got started posting on social media, I was doing affiliate marketing for like 3 or 4 or maybe even 5 years, like before I even knew what a brand deal was or considered getting a brand deal. Because really, for those of you who don't know, affiliate marketing is essentially just getting paid a small commission for promoting the products and services that you already love and that you already use. Like, we're all of us all day long are already like recommending things. So you might as well just get paid when someone actually buys the thing you recommend. So my question for you, Emily, is why do you put affiliate marketing as third on the list? Why do you put it before UGC and brand deals? Like, why should people start with affiliate marketing?
It's an easier barrier to entry. That's just how it is. Most of the time when you're working with these brand deals, you really need to have a very structured audience. You probably need to have, you know, not a huge following, but you do need to have some following, because you have to think of it on the brand side. They're looking for an ROI on their side as well. So it takes a little bit longer for you to get to that point where you can get these consistent brand deals. So that's why affiliate marketing is so great, because it's just an easier barrier to entry. If there's anything that you love, maybe there's a water bottle that you really, really love and you want to share it with your audience, you could go up, you could sign up for Amazon Associates. There's 2 affiliate programs, Amazon Associates and Amazon Influencer. Amazon Associates, it's pretty much open for anyone as long as you have a platform and you're making like the minimum commissions. So you can sign up for that right away and you can start talking about this water bottle that you really love with your audience. You get a link from the company, and once somebody makes a purchase, you get a percentage of that. So you don't need to make a product, you don't need to make any kind of service, but you can share the things that you're already talking about and getting the percentage without having to have this massive following or do the pitching and the outreach, which does take time. And then you can have that as a stepping stone to work with another brand. So maybe you're working with a brand specifically, L.L. Bean, and you've been sharing their stuff and you've been working with them as an affiliate. And then you can use that to leverage an actual paid brand partnership, a sponsored post on your own page, or potentially a UGC partnership. So it just allows a good stepping stone. The barrier to entry is really low, and there's no stress that comes with it versus if you have a brand deal, sometimes it feels a little bit more pressure. You want it to perform really well. Affiliate marketing is just, it makes it really easy for you to learn how to sell, learn how to get people to, you know, your audience to convert in that way. And then you can move up into those brand partnerships that are a little bit more stress and work and, you know, more goes into them.
It's funny that you used a water bottle as your example, because that was the first affiliate marketing that I ever did. Was
Stop.
A friend
oh
of
God.
Mine started like a water bottle company. And I would talk about it. And obviously that has nothing to do with my niche now. That had nothing to do with my niche back in the day. But like you said, it allowed me to practice selling and learn how to promote things to my audience. And I love that you brought up that it's so low stress, because I forgot about that, because I don't do a ton of affiliate marketing anymore. But I forgot about, like, it's so low stress, low pressure, because you're not contractually obligated to post a reel on X date that has to get X number of views. It's like, hey, you just signed up and the company's happy that anyone is willing to promote their stuff. And so, you know, theoretically, the more you promote, the more you can theoretically make, and you're on your own term, on your own time. So I love that. Besides Amazon Associates and Amazon Influencer Marketing, what tips would you recommend, or how can you get started in the world of affiliate marketing?
One, you can just look at the products that you already love and use, and you can just go right to Google and you can say, okay, I really love Patagonia. Like, let me see if Patagonia has an affiliate program. So you can look at these products, look at the brands, and type in the brand and affiliate program and see if they have that program. Then you can go ahead and sign up. Some will be a little bit more inclusive than others, which means you have to go through an application process and they have to look at your accounts and make sure that you are eligible. But some of them aren't like that at all. So if you aren't really sure of the products and things that you want to potentially promote, you can also just look at your niche in general. So if you look up travel affiliate programs, and a bunch of those will pop up, and you can look and scroll through there and be like, oh yes, like I just took a Viator tour last week. I'm going to sign up for Viator's a program. And I really love using a company called Travel Payouts, and they combine all of the travel affiliate programs into one. So sometimes there's programs like that as well. Rakuten is a great one because you actually get $30 when somebody signs up, which is like a pretty high affiliate program. Definitely looking at the ones that are a little bit more higher income is always going to be great. And the recurring affiliate income programs, which I think are highly underutilized. So I'm part of a travel insurance company. So they'll sign up for a year, and every single month I'm getting a paycheck from them. So that's something you want to look into as well, because that recurring income as a creator is like chef's kiss. We all love that.
Yeah, that's big time. Big time. Can you repeat the names of some of those sites and apps and services so that people can look them up, and we'll put them in the show notes below the episode too.
Yeah, absolutely. So Travel Payouts is one of my favorites for travel affiliate marketing. So they include a bunch of different travel companies on one platform. So you get paid out on one platform. Rakuten, everybody says it in a different way, but Rakuten is another great one because you get $30 when a friend, family member signs up through your link, which is a decent amount of affiliate income.
Perfect. Awesome. Love that. Love that. All right. Now we're going to pivot, because this is Social Media Money Makers, and affiliate marketing is definitely a way to make money on social media. But let's pivot to getting paid for posting, whether it's paid for travel, paid for a brand deal, whatever it may be. I don't want to poo-poo free products, and especially in the world of like travel, free travel, people know travel is expensive. So like, I want to go to Japan really bad. If anyone wants to give me a free trip to Japan, I would flip in. I don't know what I do. I do a backflip and give them a kiss. So I don't want to poo-poo free products, but I want to ask you, I want to give you this statement, and I want to hear if you agree or disagree. There are a lot of creators who deserve to get paid even though they do not have a large following yet. Agree or disagree, and why?
I think it depends on the quality of the content. So if you are doing something like user-generated content and you have the skills to make really beautiful quality content, you should absolutely get paid for that. So that's the content that you're giving the brand for them to promote. If you don't yet have an audience where you know that you can provide some type of ROI to the brand, maybe getting started by having some type of free product is a good way for you to start. Not saying that you don't deserve to get paid, but you want to make sure that you are able to deliver in some way, because the brand is putting that trust in you that you would be able to provide them with either signups or purchases or people coming to that event or going to that hotel. But you still want to make sure that it's at a level that you feel comfortable with. So if they're going to give you a product that's 99 cents and they want you to create a bunch of content for that, that's probably not going to be the brand partnership for you. If they're giving you, you know, a $200 luggage in exchange for content, maybe that's something that you can think about and that you can analyze for yourself if that is worth it for you and if that feels good to you. But at the end of the day, we all still want to negotiate some type of payment, because it's just going to elevate the industry and elevate us all, because we do deserve to get paid to create this content that we're creating, because it is a job at the end of the day for a lot of us. But sometimes it does feel better when you have had, you know, those initial kind of exchanges in the beginning, especially when we're talking about travel.
Yeah, That totally makes sense. And going back to what you were saying about like creating quality content, I think that today in 2024, it's increasingly tough to grow a following. And every year it gets tougher and tougher to grow a following. There are opportunities. It's not impossible, but it's tougher to grow on TikTok in 2024 than it was in 2021, for example, in my opinion. But I also think that making great quality content is easier than ever. Like I think about when I was even just growing up and like it was very expensive if you wanted to buy a nice HD camera, and microphone quality was bad and lighting was like unobtainable. But now all of us have phones that shoot at 4K. Like I remember when I was in high school, 4K was just invented. And now like my freaking phone in my pocket has 4K. So all of that to say, I think that making great content has never been easier. So I think that might be a very important thing to focus on early on. But speaking of early on, and actually before I move on, would you agree with everything I just said?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
Okay, cool. Okay. I'm glad. Awesome. So speaking of early on, I know you recently made a post, and I'm sure you've shared this many times before, that one of your first paid brand deals was when you had only approximately 1,000 followers. And I think that might be surprising for a lot of our listeners to hear, because they might hear you and I talking about, you know, the realisticness of the market, which is that like, yeah, if you have a large following, it's easier and it's more likely to get a brand deal. But you got a paid brand deal with about 1,000 followers. So how did you go about that? And what lessons can we gain from that story that we could apply to ourselves?
Yes, absolutely. And I just want to preface this. This is not like, I am not an outlier in this. I know a lot of people that have been able to get paid brand deals around the same amount. So for me, I really focused on creating that good content first. And so I knew exactly who my audience was. I knew who was following me, the kind of things that they would like, the questions that they were asking. So I had that idea in my mind. Then I found I was scrolling through Instagram, as we do, and I found this really great travel product. And the way that she was promoting it was that she was, you know, it was basically like a travel safety product. And I was like, wow, this is something that is really aligned in both of my travel space, but also as an epidemiologist. So before I was a travel content creator, I was an epidemiologist. So I saw, you know, in her tagged reels that she had been sponsoring different creators to help promote this. And a few of them were doctors. So I reached out in the DMs and I pitched to have a potential paid partnership with her and kind of explained my expertise, my audience, and how I could help her promote this product. So we agreed, she sent me the product, I tested it out, I made sure that I really loved it, and it was a small woman-owned business, which I absolutely love working with small women-owned businesses. And then we ended up agreeing on a paid partnership. We did a negotiation. We did a contract. All of this was very, very new to me. But I pitched myself and I basically was just explaining to her why it was very, very aligned with both me, but also my audience, and why it could really benefit her and selling her product that was a newer product that she had recently created.
So here's what I took away from everything you just said. Number one, you found a product that you loved and one that was very much in alignment with your beliefs and your values and the things you would post about anyways. That was the first thing. Then you went to her page and you did some great research, which I want to talk more about this research, but you dug through the tagged reels. So not just the posts that they had made, but the actual posts that other people had made where they had tagged this company. So you looked and you found like what that content looked like, I would assume. You kind of got to see who they work with, and just flat out, you saw that they are working with people. And then you pitched them, but you didn't just pitch them and say, hey, let's do a brand deal. You pitched them with like the unique value that you brought to the table and also why you thought they would be so aligned with you. Is that the general step 1, 2, and 3 that you teach for acquiring brand deals?
Yes, absolutely. It's, you really have to know yourself, your audience, and then that same step. You want to pitch to the right person. So for me, I went directly into the DMs. Now I would probably ask for an email and do it all through email. But back then I didn't know what I was doing. So we had a full communication in the DMs pretty much. And then exactly, telling them how you can help them. I think that's where a lot of people get lost in the pitch, is that they talk about themselves and why they want to work with them and why they really like the product. And that's great too. But you want to share how you can help this brand, this company, and how you can promote the marketing goals that they have at the current moment. Because maybe your audience is aligned, but maybe they're not looking for those kind of things that you are wanting to share or wanting to talk about. So it's always going to depend on the goals of the company, the budget of the company, what campaigns they have in mind for the full year. So definitely just going for it. And I think that's where people get tied up too, that they get their first no and then they're like, oh my God, I can never pitch again. But there could be so many different reasons as to why the brand says no in the first place.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. I often say that when you get a no, especially in brand deals, you have to approach it and look at it as a not yet or a not right now, not just a flat out no. But let's go back to the idea of researching, because I think it's so creative and cool the way you look through the tagged posts on their profile. What other little tricks and tips can you give us, maybe sites or tools to do the research? And what should we be looking for? Are there, should we try to be finding like a specific person to talk to? Is there a specific thing to keep an eye out for? I don't know. You tell me.
So when I first started, I didn't know about these, but there's actually influencer platforms that you can join. So you know right away that this brand and this company is looking for content creators to work with. So my favorite ones are Aspire. So you do need 1,000 followers to sign up for them, but not that bad. Maverick, and then Brand Meets Creators. That's more of a user-generated content platform. So those are the ones that I highly, highly recommend that you join, just because it's super easy. The brand has already reached out to them saying that we need creators to work with, and then you can apply right through the platform and everything is done through there. So it's a really easy way for you to get started, to know which brands are looking for creators, the kind of departments, the kind of budget that they have, all of that, which is very confusing in the very, very beginning. If you want to go a step further, definitely looking at the brands and companies and destinations that you already want to go to or that you already love, and then definitely doing your research. So following the brand, I think this is where like so many people don't do this. And this is already like, it's so negative. It looks so bad when they're like, I love your product. I love this destination. And you're not even following them and you're not even, you know, you don't really know anything about them. So follow the brand, interact with their content. A lot of brands don't get interaction on their content. They don't get a ton of engagement. So you're already standing out if you're engaging and talking with that brand. So that's kind of the first step there. And then yes, you want to find the correct contact to pitch to. So you're either going to look for a marketing, PR, influencer contact that you can reach out to so that you know that it's going to the right inbox. That's kind of the biggest thing, right? You want to pitch to the right person, not just like info@apple.com. You want to make sure that you're pitching to the person that's making the decisions. So you can find this on their website at times. You can find this on LinkedIn. You can send them a DM and ask if they can give you the correct email to reach out and pitch to. And then you want to figure out how you can actually help them and support them. So definitely do your research, look through their social media, look at their website, see what kind of things they have coming up. Sometimes they do have a marketing brief that you can also look up so you can see their kind of goals that they're looking at for the year. So you really want to put your research in to make sure that you actually are aligned with that brand, that company, that destination. You don't want to pitch to a family-friendly destination when you are talking about solo travel. That's just, you're just wasting everybody's time. So definitely making sure you have a pitch in mind in a way that you can help support them so that you can have all of that information in your pitch.
Gotcha. Gotcha. All right. That totally makes sense. And I know you have quite literally written the handbook on becoming a travel creator. So can you tell us where we can snag that? Because I believe it's a free handbook, correct?
Yes. I created a free 18-page handbook that goes over everything from creating content to pitching to platforms to join to monetization on platforms like Stan Store, hosting group trips. It goes over everything. So you can find that in my bio on my Instagram, Emily Eats and Explores. You can also comment handbook on any single one of my reels and it will be sent right to your DM. And I'm sure it could be shared in the bio or in the show notes of the podcast as well.
Yeah, definitely. We'll put it down there. Thank you so much for that. We'll also put your link to your social and all that good stuff down in the show notes as well. Speaking of monetization, though, here's a question that I'm sure a lot of people listening today have, which is that maybe they, like you and I, are also entrepreneurs who sell things. And so there's this kind of balancing act between accepting a brand deal or doing affiliate marketing where you're essentially promoting someone else's thing. And then there's your own thing, your own products, your own offers that you're selling. So how do you balance between the two? Is it 50-50? Is it, you know, a specific percentage you try to stick to? How do you think about the split between the two?
I think most of the time I'm going to focus on my own products and services first, just because you're usually getting the highest percentage on those versus if you're sharing something on the affiliate side. Plus, they're just products that I've created. I absolutely love myself. My audience really, really loves. So I try to do a great job at sharing those and sharing my free products with that. But for example, in my handbook, you will find, as long as the affiliate programs are okay with it, I'll have affiliate links that are embedded into my free content or in my newsletter or in my email sequence that I'm giving out. So that's just something I don't really have to think about sharing and make sure that I'm doing. It's very much passive in that sense where I've already created it. It's already in there. And if people want to make a purchase, they definitely can. If I'm doing some type of packing list or something else, I'll share the affiliates here and there or a different tour or anything like that. But brand partnerships, I personally like to stick to one a month at this point, just because of the level that I am at. I have a little bit higher of a rate that I charge. So that's just works with me and works with the kind of content that I want to showcase. So probably one or two a month, I would say one brand and maybe one travel partnership a month is my max there. But you're going to have to figure out what works for you and what feels best for you. And for me, this is just what I found works best for me.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And I appreciate you sharing that. That's very much how I think of it as well. I think that's such a golden nugget that so many entrepreneurs might have just maybe had a light bulb aha moment, is like, whoa, I could do affiliate marketing within my courses or within my ebooks or within anything that I create with my Stan store. I can embed affiliate links in because, like, they're the products I would recommend people use anyways. So I might as well get credit for promoting those things. So I think that is so awesome. Emily, I wanted to say thank you so much for being here today. You're such a wealth of knowledge. I feel like I learned so much myself today. And I know we didn't even go deep into how do I travel to Japan for free. So I'm going to have to ask you that question off air. But I appreciate everything that you shared with us today. And thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I love following you. I love being a part of the Stan community. So thank you so, so much for having me here.
From the bottom of my heart, truly, thank you so much for listening today. I really hope you enjoyed today's episode. Make sure to give Emily a follow if you haven't already. Download that free guide that's linked down below. And if you enjoyed today's episode, I would love to hear from you, whether it's in the direct messages on Instagram, whether you're leaving a review of this podcast, anywhere that you can share your feedback would be greatly appreciated. Thank you for being here, and I will see you in next week's episode of Social Media Moneymakers.